Are you ready now? Be my queen, yes, take love. All you need but video. Anything you want, my girl. Anywhere you want, my love.
PremiumBeat.com.
Hello, guys. Welcome back to episode 10. Episode 10. Can you believe it? We're already 10 episodes deep to the Wine and Uncorked Chronicles podcast with your host, me, Sylvie. And a little plot twist for you today. For those who saw the teaser on Instagram, you only saw one face, and that face was mine. But due to extenuating circumstances, to say the least, I managed to grab myself a very special guest on today's episode. So before we get into the episode, I'm just going to give you a little introduction to who this special guest is. So we were recently in Pakistan, so we should be a first hint for you lot. And we were there for various reasons, but one of the key reasons was to attend a friend's wedding. We're going to get into all the nitty-gritty details, but on top of that was our crazy adventure through the Hunza Valley. So in the studio, guys, with me today is Mr. Leonard or Leo? Which would you like to be?
Either works. It's fine.
Good. Leo. So I'm pretty sure everyone who knows, who's listening knows Leo. Not that famous yet for you guys not to know Leo. But for those who might be joining us for the very first time, Leo is my partner in crime, aka the Bonnie to my Clyde, aka the peanut butter to my banana, aka the tonic to my gin. So my partner, my boyfriend, Leonard Pumper, welcome to my show. It feels kind of strange having you on, but I'm very excited because I think that you bring in very, very interesting inputs and insights into our very recent adventure. And welcome to the show.
Thank you, Sylvie. Yeah, also quite funny to be here. What's up, guys? It's me. Very happy to be here today. Talk a little bit about Pakistan. And I actually didn't know I'm also your Bonnie to the Clyde, whatever that means. But I'm happy that I'm your peanut butter. So that goes well. That goes well. Dreamy, soft, and chunky, I guess.
I would say all the above, for sure. Anyway, so I always start my show with a little bit of an icebreaker question. Usually very simple. So we both have a shared love of wine, but my favorite might not be your favorite and your favorite might not be mine. So I'm curious to hear what is your wine pick, and maybe you can share a little light as to why those are your wine picks. So do indulge me. Tell me.
All right. So what do we have? I think my wine taste, first of all, is different to yours because I mainly drink white wine and you're on the red side. Mm-hmm. So my favorite one, what's that again? I think this is a New Zealand one. Oyster Bay.
Yes.
I don't know. My mom gave it to me once and I really liked it. It has a really good zing. Mm-hmm. It's really, you're really blessed if you have this one in your fridge.
Blessed.
Yeah. So actually I wrote a wine review about this wine.
Okay.
And I'm just looking at it at Vivino. I don't remember it by heart, but it was in 2020. Mm-hmm. It was a great wine to blaze through lockdown, yeah, for sure.
Easy drink, zingy.
Yeah, it's an easy drink, pick you up. Mm-hmm. And I'm just reading out this one Ryan review that I wrote about this wine back in the day. So that's, I walked into a wine shop and said that I'm looking for a wine that screams bold, intense, and tastes damn good. I tried the Oyster Bay and immediately paid for it and boom, left the store. I knew that this wine can make a grown man cry. Fast forward 3 days later, and not a day goes by without me drinking this New Zealandian Stallion. If you don't have this in your collection, do yourself a favor and get this now. Right. This is how good it is.
Okay, every day. Every day is crazy. So you're just here saying that, I don't blame you. It's lockdown. What else are you going to do?
Straight 4.0.
Yeah. 4.0 out of 5. That's a tall rating. Yeah, it
gives you a nice like body buzz, you know.
Okay. Mm. But body buzz is different from head buzz?
Yeah, definitely. Like you feel it throughout the whole body.
Okay.
Your toes, your nails. Okay. Nah, maybe not your nails, but
ranchers.
It gives you a gentle refresh.
Okay. All right. Thanks for that. So now let's get into our recent trip to Pakistan. So we're going to do a before, during, and after breakdown of this trip because, right. Of course, a friend invited us for his wedding, a friend of ours from Kenya days. I don't know if I should mention the name or not, so I'm going to leave that up to the
Zuhair.
Okay, there we go. Cats out of the bag. Zuhair, yes, he invited us to Pakistan to share his special days where he was betrothed to a rather lovely lady. But anyway, Before the trip, before we went, we had some interesting conversations that happened. We had, of course, our own feelings. I just want to know, for you, what were your pre-trip feelings? So, like, the build-up up to this point, okay? So, obviously, we booked our flights. We then had to get our visas. That was a process in itself. And then we had to deal with our own feelings towards going to Pakistan. So maybe tell me a bit about what you were feeling, because I think maybe slightly different to mine.
Yeah, so in general, I think we came quite unprepared. Like I didn't research that much because I knew we would go like on this organized tour and the wedding would be organized as well. So didn't do much preparation, but I must say I did have a little bit of a feeling there in my stomach about going to Pakistan. Yeah, because it's just like you hear little about it, and if you hear about it, it's mainly not the good news. So went there and also went there with the feeling of, right, I'm very happy if I'm back.
Yeah, I'm happy when I go and I'm happy when I get back. And I think that the end of the trip will definitely affirm that. But
obviously, I was always looking forward to the wedding.
Of course.
Because it's the day of the big boy.
Yeah.
Zuzu dog.
Zuzu dog, the liakat, whatever, Zaddy.
Yeah. Zig Daddy.
Zaddy. So yeah, I think I'm going to speak about myself. So obviously I was, I never thought in my life that I would set foot in Pakistan. It was never on my radar. Of course, aside from the fact that that's where Zuhair is from, I never thought that one day I was actually going to go to Pakistan, which in itself is crazy because there's not many people in the world who can say that they went to Pakistan for a wedding. And on top of that, toured through the Hunza Valley. My feelings prior to going, I was a bit anxious because I also just didn't know what to expect. We were meeting, people we know from Nairobi. It was going to be a big group. Some people we knew already, some people we didn't know. So I think my anxiety stemmed from mostly like, are we going to get along in the group? What's the group dynamic going to be like? Like, that's the kind of things I think about. Are we going to have enough conversation? And also, I think two nights before we flew out, for some reason, I had a dream that our plane crashed or something like that happened. So, yeah, that was very unsettling. But all of those anxieties dissolved away the minute we took to the skies.
Is that why you popped the melatonin?
Yeah, I had to pop that bitch. had to sleep. I was very anxious, let's just say. And not because of... It was the whole thing, to be honest. So we now take our flight. We land in Islamabad, and we are picked up by Zuhair's brother.
The Riz.
Rizwan at the crack of dawn. Fantastic guy. Takes us to our place of stay for the next 2 days, Hotel La Maison. Yeah, guys, check it out. Booking.com. Read the reviews.
No, it's a nice place. It gives you a head. It gives you a bed. It gives you a shower. It's warm. It's nice. Yeah.
Except
what else do you want?
Last night, the water wasn't warm. So we began our adventures. Landed in Islamabad. Got to the hotel about circa 5:30 in the morning, and then we got a bit of rest. And we had the first of the 2 day wedding happening later that evening. So we got ourselves, you know, looking good, decked out. You got yourself a nice black suit, kurta, 3-piece.
Yeah, got a three-piecer. And basically also bought a little jacket to accompany it with. Mm-hmm. And we went to a mall, Moy Mall, for Moy those mall. In Nairobi.
Yeah.
He's spreading. And it was a funny shopping, you know, they just talk to you a lot and you're just overwhelmed about like what the customs are and what you should wear. And basically I didn't have a choice. You gave me this and said, you buy it. And then I bought it. Boom.
Yeah, exactly. He said to me, this is a wedding outfit. The others I was looking at were not the wedding outfit and the last one in my size. So anyway, we went back to the hotel. We did our shopping, went back to the hotel. So the group from Kenya had already been in Lahore a week before and they spent time with Zuhair and his family and met some of Zuhair. Has friends from there.
Lahuzl.
Lahizi. they had some dances prepared. They, you know, everyone. So we are now already makeup on, heels on, dresses on. We're looking dapper. We're ready to go to the wedding. And we get there and it starts raining.
Yeah, I mean, plan B was plan A. And that was quite funny because the wedding was really beautiful. Like, it was on a hillside, came a bit too late, so it was dark already, but nevertheless, all in a good mood. Everyone really hungry. You know, there's no alcohol, there's no possibility to pop a cold one or anything like that.
To pop a cold one.
So we were just there, and then the wind came, and the winds of the Himalayas, basically. They blew away the tents, they blew away the food. They just made a mess and we were just all sitting there and no one really wanted to react in any certain way. So we were just sitting there in a funny situation. Covers were flying around. Everyone's still eating chicken wings, whatever, you know. It was funny. But everyone kept their calm and it was beautiful. I had to pick up the tents and they made photos and they obviously put the ring and everything. So it was a nice experience, especially for them. And also for us.
Of course. I mean, witnessing one of our good friends getting married is always a very nice experience. And even more so in a very traditional, like non-conventional way that we're used to seeing when we go to weddings here or wherever we do go. What I do remember in particular is one character who featured throughout these 2 days, who I found out is actually Zuhair's mom's brother, the guy in the cargo hat.
This guy, he was definitely all over the place, literally all over. Had his phone all the time for 3 hours minimum on record and filmed the whole thing. And that was really funny because he also wouldn't step aside. Nah, I mean, he would step aside, but he was just always there. He was a very lovely person, always said good things, and it was just humbling, but it was also a funny experience.
Mm-hmm. Where are you from?
Sorry.
Treading on a thin ice there. He said Leo was very strong because he's from Germany. Strong guy. Huh?
Yeah, nothing to add.
Mashallah.
Yeah.
Is what he added. So he was an interesting character. He was very lovely again, guys. He basically recorded the whole ceremony. There was no need for videographers because it was like basically a live stream of the wedding, and a lot of the focus was on us rather than his nephew who was getting married.
Everything, I would say, the whole thing, landscape mode.
Yes, and of course there was also people who really wanted pictures with you, Mr. Photographer.
Not
carrying
really.
Carrying your yeah.
Oh, okay.
I mean,
yeah.
You had a group of young girlies. Yeah, who followed you and were calling you Tom Watson. Oh my God, it looks like Tom Watson.
All right, I'm not going to comment.
Feel free to comment. So it's a safe space.
Okay. That happened.
No need to blush. So this carried on for this day and then the next day. We were also introduced to a very lovely key character in this whole trip. His name is Mr. Malik Bilal. Shout out to this guy.
Bilal. No, greatest guy on earth, really.
Yeah.
Such a lovely person. Also very, very good organizing skills and enjoying it.
Exactly.
Like you could really see that he's enjoying it and like Jesus, like 24/7, really.
Yeah, I mean, he was able to deal with 13 other adult kids who had questions left, right, and center. And on top of having a guide, Malik, who is Zuhair's really good friend, was there to translate everything for us, to cushion all the blows, to make things light, and to just keep the spirits up. We were always in pretty good spirits anyway throughout the whole trip. But yeah, Malik, you brought something to this whole trip that is simply unforgettable. And we are hoping that we're going to see you soon again. So 3 a.m. in the morning, Sunday, we are ready to go.
Now, first of all, we had a little pre-party.
Oh yes.
Yeah. So second wedding day was actually quite nice. There was a nice tradition that I remembered, you know, Suhair and Mina sitting there.
Mm-hmm.
And people were actually throwing money at them, like,
ah yes, the money,
like money, you know, like in the clubs.
Yeah.
And it didn't wiggle at all.
This money didn't wiggle.
And the tradition is actually quite beautiful because it says that you know, the couple doesn't even get affected by it. They don't get enchanted by it. The money that they have like showering over them.
Yeah.
They said it doesn't matter, don't care, we don't take it because we have each other.
Exactly.
So the kids, little kids picked it up. Yeah. It was 10 rupees only, so not much worth. But you could see them picking up and returning it to the one who gave it to them. But I also saw a few kids that they also like took the chance and put some in their pockets. I mean, it's not a bad idea. Everyone has to survive.
Yeah,
right?
Guys, gotta get your own. Gotta get your bread, gotta get your food. so that was very interesting. The money throwing. Yeah, we were all, what do you call it, chopping the money, making it rain. That was a lot of fun. Mm-hmm. And what also really cool was the whole milk bargaining. That was really cool.
Oh yeah, that was a whole spectacle.
Yeah.
Like that stays in my mind for sure. You have to negotiate for a glass of milk. Between the families,
mm-hmm.
Right? So there was Malik the man right there with JP, Yannick Potschlev, another...
JP?
Oh, YP, yeah. Trying to bargain, and I think they made a really good deal. This glass of milk was delicious, £50, I think, right?
Yeah, they said $50.
$50, yeah.
Which was an expensive glass of milk.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep. That's what you gotta.
That's what you gotta do.
That's what you gotta drink.
Exactly. Drink that milk. Milk made of gold. Yeah. So anyway, you know, Kenya group also had a really fantastic dance that they performed.
Oh yeah.
Afrobeats mashup. And a Pakistani dance as well. So they really stole the show. I think that everyone, the Pakistani audience, was very thrilled and excited to see this. I think they really enjoyed what the Kenyans or the people from Kenya had to bring to the table.
No, for sure, like fantastic performance, I must say. Also a lot of effort that they put into it. So cute to see them dance. The group went wild.
Yeah.
So many messages before the wedding.
Exactly.
And it really paid off.
They
really nailed it down to dance to the gods.
Yeah, and we were supposed to be part of this. But we didn't, we decided against it.
Exactly.
For reasons that we shall not disclose on this podcast. Anyway, moving on. So fast forward, pre-party before, we didn't sleep that night. So our bus was coming. We were supposed to begin the journey 3 a.m. So the bus was there 2:30. Managed to score ourselves a little whiskey. A little pre-party whiskey and some vodka. So that was also interesting.
It worked.
So we got some juice in us. We were having a really good time. And then we packed up, put the bus into motion, and we headed off into the unknown. We started our journey towards the Hunza Valley. Now, audience, this was the beginning of what we didn't know was a 22-hour bus journey.
An odyssey.
An odyssey, he said. And it starts off like you obviously, we slept for, I think, the first bit of it. And I remember at the first road stop where we were stopped by the road police, we were informed shortly thereafter that we would be requiring, as we are foreigners traveling, a police escort. So the boys got out of the truck, and there was one guy there and another younger man there holding his AK-47 assault rifle, who I forget his name, but interesting guy. He told you some interesting stories about him. He's got a TikTok account, big following, rather big following. And I mean, the setting was very...
He wants to go fight in Russia.
He wants... I was getting to that. He wants to go fight in Russia for the Russians and for the Ukrainians.
No,
for the Russians. Oh, he wants to fight for the Russians.
Yeah.
I thought you said he didn't really know which side.
You can't fight for both sides.
Yeah, but I thought he said that he didn't really know.
No.
Okay, anyway. Anyway, there's a brilliant picture of the boys and him. He was really keen on the photos.
He really liked Yannick, and as an appreciation, he even gave the hat to him. Yes. So I think that's a pretty special hat to keep in your cupboard. Yeah. It's a KPK police officer hat, like a bucket hat.
Yeah, super cool.
That's gonna be at some raves, I guess.
It's going to be at some raves. I've seen a lot. Onward and upward, we've got ourselves a police escort, but we're stopped then again at the next place, and they tell us, oh, now we need to switch over the police escorts, because I think the way I understood it is that at every point, checkpoint, you need to switch over escorts, and we shouldn't essentially be left alone at these parts.
Yeah, exactly. And like each time we switched the district, we had to get a new police escort.
Exactly. Until the point where we are now deep in the valley. So the roads start getting much rougher. The views start getting more intense. The roads do not have little barriers shielding cars from potentially flying off into the end stages. There was just us, the road, a bunch of other trucks, and a bunch of 14 foreigners
not knowing what's going on
except what is going on.
Check it out, like, it's called Karakoram Highway. You see a lot of like scary videos. That's definitely worth checking out.
Yes. Yeah, so I remember obviously the intense views, the just feeling very small. I think I've never seen or been engulfed by mountains like this. I mean, I've seen the Alps, puny compared to these giants. What was your thinking at this time? How were you feeling as we were going through these valleys, winding in the roads, seeing the waterfall, being overtaken by huge buses carrying way too much load on them?
Well, in the morning I was still pretty tired, so I didn't really feel anything. But then I, out of a sudden, checked the Google Maps and didn't show any location since we didn't have network. But after a while, I checked again, and then I saw where we are, and we barely made like a fourth of the road, and we're already like 6 hours on our way. And it said it would be 10 hours. Yes. So I'm like, all right, this must be something different to the schedule. And yeah, the road just never ended, really.
Yeah, we were told it's a 10-hour journey. It ended up being double of that. But at the end of 22 hours, we get to a place called Gilgit. Now, Gilgit is in Baltistan, which is a region in the north of Pakistan. On the way to Gilgit, some of the stories were now coming up about, or rather what we saw was, you know, a lot of Chinese, Pakistani kind of friendship. There seems to be some economic relationships happening between China and Pakistan, and they're helping to build the roads and the bridges and the dam in the valley. However, we had at some point we were asking, oh, why do we need a police escort? Why do we need escorts? All this, isn't this just too much? And we were told the story that apparently the workers in these areas decided to take a bus, or they were going somewhere unescorted, and they usually should get escorts. And then what happened?
Well. Yeah, they got bombed.
Yeah.
It's also a little bit unsettling, of course, but we managed to keep our heads away from it, since we quite felt safe with our police escorts and
guide.
We are also not working there, so
no, exactly. Yes,
they were targeting workers more.
Yeah,
that built the road.
Exactly, and of course there are probably some people who aren't happy about the friendship that the Pakistanis and Chinese are forming. But finally, we get to Gilgit, Ramada, fantastic hotel. At this point,
we are squished like a sardine.
Squished, we've slept, we've woken up. We left at 3 in the morning, we arrived at Gilgit at 10:30 or something like this p.m. at night. So we are, at some point, I think everyone was like, are we even going to get there? Like, where are we being taken? For real? Is this a scam? I remember at some point I was like, these guys are taking us to the Chinese border. We're going to get trafficked and sold. These are, of course, just my intrusive thoughts.
Shout out to the driver, though. Fantastic. What a legend. Like, he drove us without any incidents, without any even going too deep into the curves, not overtaking riskily. It was like a machine. Really. And he was like 50 years old, driving 22 hours straight, almost with 1 hour break. Respect.
And he didn't look tired at any point. To be honest, I didn't see him look like, oh, he might start nodding off or sleeping. Fantastic driver.
Mainly because you were sleeping.
Yeah, also that. And also was nauseous. So Gilgit, we get there, we're rested. But then everyone just starts to feel a little sick in some way. Everyone either has a little cold coming on or a little... Hunza belly, Gilgit belly.
Yeah, so, hit me.
Yeah, all the interesting foods had obviously decided to take their toll on us. So some people had, for lack of a better word, diarrhea.
Not sure what it was. Chai. I mean, the wedding food was really great. I think it was more like a roadside chai or something.
Yeah, I think everyone somehow got affected in some way. I think, you know, traveling to a different country, the oils are different. Your stomach is just not used to the difference in food. So naturally, your body is going to be a bit more unhappy, let's just say, even though we were happy eating all this fantastic food. So we arrive in Ramada, we spend a fantastic night, we sleep really well, and then in the morning we have a fantastic breakfast and we wake up to the view of the Himalayas, mountain peaks covered with snow, so tall into the sky, unseeable. Honestly, it's so high up, it's so big, it's unbelievable how, like, you've just never seen mountains this big. I've never honestly seen anything like this. And I didn't know what to expect, let's just say. But I didn't expect to see things that were, for me, felt like, yeah, they're in the heavens.
Yeah, I never saw so many rocks.
That's what you kept saying. There's so many rocks. That one is so big. And mind you, this is also a landslide-prone area, right?
Very.
So there's always a risk that when it rains, there could be landslides. So park that idea in the back of your heads, guys. And then, yeah, let's take a little break and we'll be right back. Well, I ain't sure, but I think this girl is dangerous, dangerous. Could she be on my mind? Last night was fabulous. Okay, guys, welcome back. Thank you for keeping tuned in. I'm still here, joined by the lion, Leonard Pumpe.
What's up?
So, yes, we finally head on to Hunza Valley. What was your general feeling as we were making our way to Hunza? Just based on, of course, the last 24 hours coming from Islamabad, you know, all the kind of winding through the valleys, and now
I was like, is it the way not ending? Like, seriously, we drove 20 hours or so, and then we still sit an hour, like 3 hours in a bus, and we're still not there. And the guide always said, yeah, just like 20 minutes. And I just didn't believe that this place would ever exist, you know. But then coming and driving into this valley, you could see the valley and the what do you call it? It just got bigger and bigger, yeah. More enormous. And then you see this town of Hunza being nestled there underneath these white high peaks, And oh God, it was something that I had never seen before. Really, really, really breathtaking and unique.
And I think for me, what I remember after sleeping for again another, I don't know how many hours, I woke up and then we finally saw the beginning of the lake.
Mm.
The bluest water I have ever seen.
Yeah.
It was like looking straight into a sapphire. I could not believe how...
Blue topaz.
Excuse me. And I couldn't believe how... I think I was just awestricken. I didn't know that there was water that could be so clear, so blue, straight from the mountains. Also very interesting story how the valley was formed. So apparently there was a very big landslide and the debris kind of settled in the bottom of the valley. And then what happened?
Well, it blocked the way for the water and they built a dam, so...
It became...
A lake.
Yeah,
exactly. So you can still see the trees, and you know there's a whole village buried down in the water there now. The old highway, they had to construct a new one, so the scenery itself is very magical.
Yeah.
Lake Atabat.
Yes.
Yeah.
Well remembered.
Good.
And then we got to the Hunza Luxus Hotel.
Yeah.
Cute little hotel right by the lake in the valley. Of course, you go down another super windy road and you're just engulfed in nature and you're being blown by this winds that are moving at like 100 miles per hour. Of course, not that fast, but really fast. And yeah, it was this cute like cabin-ish type hotel. Interesting situation, but we at this point we're just very happy to get there. You eat your yak meat, I eat my chicken karahi, and we wake up the next day and we embark on a hike.
Mm. Everyone was feeling somehow sick or cold or headache or nausea or diarrhea, just weak. Back pain.
Yeah,
Jesus Christ! Like getting there was a whole journey. Really, it's incredible what this driver did to us, and just a good feeling when we arrived, you know, home for the next 3 days.
Yeah, so we went on a really nice hike to a viewpoint right across the where we were staying on the highway. It was about a 2 hour hike in total, and when we got to the top, we saw the incredible views. We sat there in nature. It was very cold, very windy, but just absolutely fantastic. And mind you guys, we at this whole time it's a big group of people, so of course When you're a group of people, there's always very interesting situations that happen, interesting personalities, and they put that all together and it creates room for potential tension. Nothing did happen, but there was points at which people's patience was tested. Maybe I speak for myself only.
I had a good time.
Yeah, guys, I'm just that person. I think that you shouldn't. Yeah, personally, after 2 weeks of traveling and your group of 14 people, it's very hard to keep your spirits up constantly. But that anyway, the hikes were beautiful. Leo doesn't support. He doesn't support my opinions in anything. Allow me to rant. So we go all the way back down, beautiful day, and the next day we are then told that we are going to a village nearby where we could do a spot of shopping. Is that when we go into the fort?
I think so.
I
think that was the day when we went to the fort and then to shopping. Maybe we went to the village before, but it doesn't matter.
No, that was on the last day before we headed back to Gilgit. Anyway, we went shopping. Guys, they have the most beautiful cashmere scarves. They've got amazing jewelry. So, of course, the gals, we went on a bit of a shopping spree as the guys sat there, hated us for shopping for so long. What could we possibly be buying again? What more could you possibly want? Are you thinking about how heavy the luggage is? Come on, people. Can we move? I'm hungry. I'm tired. That was the general feeling.
Yeah. The shawls times seven.
Yeah. And so yeah, I guess this was essentially the feeling of the journey. There was a lot of activity happening all the time. We were constantly on the move. We'd go back to the hotel, sleep. And then we had our bonfire this one night,
yeah,
or two nice. Nights. Yeah. These were very nice nights. So we played undercover. For those of you who don't know the game, it's like Mafia, a great game to play with a group of people. That was very interesting. But I think I want to talk about the second barbecue night, where it was just you, me, Malik, and Ahmed, and we were talking about scary ghost stories.
Oh, scary ghost stories, yeah. So there's this one story, you know, they believe in sort of the spirits in the mountains, that there's spirits that keep peace in the mountains or something like this. And if you disturb them, basically, they are coming to you. So basically, what's the story that our guide told us? Once he was waking up in the middle of the night, and he just stood in the hallway and took a picture, but there was no one. But then he looked at his picture in the phone and he saw a woman standing there. He took another picture, looked, the lady wasn't there, but it was still on his phone. He started running, went to his bed, and then contacted the hotel manager to come and see what's happening. And there was no woman, but he showed the picture. But in the end, we actually never got to see the stupid picture.
Yeah. So.
But I'm believing, I trust this guy, so maybe he can send it. Second story, he was going to a base camp somewhere, and they were like lying in the tent at night, and he went out to take a pee.
Mm-hmm.
Normally what you do is you pray, because you're in like different environment, and you pray before going out to pee, mm-hmm. to make sure everything's fine. He forgot to do that, so he came into the tent back again, mm-hmm. lied down for 10 seconds, and he felt like someone pushing his throat.
Yeah.
He couldn't breathe anymore.
Yeah.
He was paralyzed, pushing his throat. He couldn't move. After like 30 seconds, he punched his like...
he was like trying to signal his friends.
His friends that were lying next to him, but they were asleep.
And nobody heard him.
Then after like 50 seconds or so, he managed to stand up, and then they were waking up, and that's when he felt it being released.
Yeah.
After he actually prayed.
And what he kept saying is that he was shouting. Apparently he was shouting and shouting and saying to his, calling his friends, but it was only after the pressure was released that his friends also woke up.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So, I mean, some people might call that sleep paralysis. Other people might be a bit more superstitious. So anyway,
he smoked a bit too much.
Some hashish.
But I believe in these stories, to be honest. Like, maybe there's something that we can't explain with our senses, especially in these high mountains. Once you're there, you feel like there's certain energy that's just not there in other environments. And you feel like this, there could be room for something supernatural like this.
Yeah. I mean, Malik also said that there was a place not far from where we were staying, where apparently there's a couple of nights every year where they don't even allow people to go down to the river, because that's the night where they believe that the souls are passing and they should not be disturbed. And so, of course, they have these superstitious elements in their culture, in their beliefs. And just as you've said, Leo, I think, when you go out into nature and it's just you and the elements, and it's not hard to imagine that there are things there that are unexplainable to the human brain.
So humbling.
But also, I thought that was a very nice, intimate moment that we shared with the driver, and he was very open about his experiences. You know, he's somebody who enjoys hiking and trekking, and bonding like that around the campfire always makes for some great memories. So that was the final night that we had in Hunza, and then the next day we set off onto our journey back to Gilgit, where we would stay another night. But before we get to Gilgit, we have some very interesting things that happen. So firstly, we go to a UNESCO World Heritage Site, to a tiny village. This was a very, very nice tour, that guided tour that we were taken on. I was a bit distracted, to be honest, that during that whole tour. But do you remember like the details of the tour? Were you too busy taking pictures? Like, what was the... I mean, they were just showing us how they lived a very long time ago. So
no, still.
and still, but it was about like how they kept the place insulated and how they kept it cool. And of course they had barn animals or animals that they were living with, and they used those animals as well for insulation. So they would put them at the door, then they had a different chamber. What else was something that stood out for me there? Ah, and the wood carvings, right?
Because
Indian
it was
symbols, the Buddhist symbols.
Yeah, because this whole region was Tibet back in the days. It was ruled by Buddhist rulers, and then after a while the Islam took over. But they still had a lot of influence from this Buddhism and Tibetan culture.
Mm-hmm.
So that was very interesting to see like the differences, and also the castle, which was renovated, Aga Khan Foundation.
Yes.
Here we go.
Shout out. We went to the Hunza Fort? Fort? So they kind of showed us how they lived. At least this was the fort where I guess the Khan dynasty were living.
Khan,
the Khans.
No, Aga Khan was the foundation who renovated it.
Ah, lol. Scratch that.
Different rulers, like
who lived
different
in
kings,
this fort.
And there's still one living there now, in a different fort.
Oh, the one opposite. Okay.
Yeah.
Okay, so I completely missed that. Oh my god, I wasn't paying attention. Anyway, so we now begin our journey back to Gilgit. And on the way back, we happen to stumble upon a volleyball game that's happening. And we asked the driver to pull over, and we're like, we have to see what's going on. So we pull over. Mind you guys, we had been indulging in a little Hunza water.
Is that a little cliffhanger?
We'll take a break. So we were at the cliffhanger point volleyball game. So I'm curious to hear what your experience was about the volleyball game. So let's talk about you. I don't even know who saw it. I think it was somebody.
It was Antonia.
Antonia was like, oh, what's that?
Yeah.
What's that? And he was like, it's a volleyball game. And she was like, oh, can we stop? Can we see? Initially, people were like, ah, no, let's just continue, because we thought we had a really long journey ahead. But we had been drinking some Hunza water. Hunza water, guys, is a kind of moonshine from these parts. It's made of mulberries. Very nice. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah, so you know, in Pakistan, you're not allowed to drink alcohol, and obviously also the alcohol making industry is very, very small. They have a local brewery, I think, in Lahore that makes beer for export, but other than that, nothing real. But in Hunza, there's this own distilled alcohol. It's called Hunza water, because you're not allowed to use words that resonate or like meet or like
with alcohol,
connected to alcohol. So they call it Hunza water.
Mm-hmm.
And it's basically, you can imagine a 30%, it smells like 30% alcohol, so less strong than vodka, but it has a similar taste in a way.
Vodka, yeah,
and it tastes a bit different. It's more like a licorice, and it Yeah, I mean mulberries, right? These little berries. So it has a little bit of a fruity taste. Mm-hmm. So definitely very interesting. Hard to get. You know, there's only one guy who makes this water, and he's the king of Hunza water. There's actually this article you should read. We'll post it in the...
Yes, I'll post it in the link, guys. Have a read of it. Carry on.
So we enjoyed that the night before, actually.
Mm-hmm.
Got a little buzz, and that was very nice with some chasers. Even without it, you can drink it. It's something really special because, you know, in a country where you can't drink alcohol, you just all of a sudden sit there sipping on some homebrew stuff, and you want like, damn it, am I gonna be blind next day? Am I gonna wake up? But luckily, everything was fine. Something really unique.
Yeah. And so we are now at the volleyball game. So we go in there. Of course, we are foreigners. We look very different. It's a bunch of Kenyans, a bunch of Germans, and a nice mix.
What's the first thing that you noticed when you came into this little stadium?
That there were no women.
Exactly.
There were no women at all. We were the only women there.
Yeah.
Which was very strange because I was like, where are all the women?
Yeah.
Like, I don't know if it that they're not allowed to watch or that they're not interested in watching.
I think they're not allowed to watch that.
But somebody said that they can if they want to, but it's just not...
Oh, maybe
it's
that.
Just not...
But in general, you see just very, very few women
on the streets.
Mainly when they take their daughters or sons to school or something like this. But other than that, like never a woman selling you stuff in a shop or something.
No, actually, they were all men.
Yeah.
Like, I think the women just stay at home, take care of the kids, cook, clean, very traditional roles, I guess. So we get into the volleyball game. We're ushered in, and basically everyone's fascinated that there's foreigners there. Volleyball game is happening, and they take us and they welcome us.
Very kind.
Yeah, they welcome us with open arms, and you know, more than welcome us, they're thrilled to have us.
Mm.
So they make us sit on the officiators' chairs. So we are sitting there as though we are the ones who are umpiring the match, or like, you know, watching the match for our pleasure, which was very nice. And then, guys, Leo is also a photographer. I'm sorry, I'm just bringing this in so late, but this is a really important part to this whole story. Leo does street and documentary photography. I'll let him explain what that is. But he was busy, of course, matches like this where there's a lot of things happening. It's always very good for getting shots of people in their element, interesting movements, interesting things that are happening. And he was doing his thing, taking pictures everywhere, getting in people's faces. Leo, please.
No, I mean, I walked in there and it was already a really beautiful light. You know, it was like afternoon and you could see like there's a really special feel about it because the light was so beautiful. So I thought like, okay, I have to just make something out of this moment and walk around. And like usually I'm not much of a portrait taker, but this time I just went to the people. There's so many interesting and unique faces to see. Everyone looks really different, and of course also scarred by life, or like they carry a lot of experience in their face. So I thought that this could be nice to just take a few photos of the people. And then I walked around the court, and then out of a sudden I actually feel like a microphone next to me, and there was this guy who was directing this match, and he actually told me, all right, here, you want to say a few words? And I would just, then out of a sudden I just find myself there, up there, everyone basically looking at me, and I have this microphone in my hand, and then I say a few words. I guess I didn't really think about what I have to say or something like this, but just did it.
Yeah. And we actually have the recording that I'm going to play right now.
Hunza, Hunza Valley, and Nagar, sorry, Nagar. And it's, so first of all, big shout out to Nagar Valley and all the beautiful people here.
That's it.
Hello. Second of all, so nice to see so many young, great, powerful people here. Great to see the match. I hope the best team wins. You're all doing great. And it's very, very nice to be a guest here. We are enjoying especially the apricots and the apples, as well as the Hunza water. I wish you all the best.
So that was his speech. And especially the Hunza water, and the crowd went wild.
Yeah, I was just really arguing in my head a little bit about if I should say that, because, you know, it's a frowned upon thing to talk about alcohol. But I just said, all right, let's go with the moment. And these guys seemed to enjoy it. So that was quite nice. And afterwards, someone took me to have tea or chai on top of the stadium somewhere there in the mountain. And that was also a lovely experience. There was a guy coming over, offering me chai. Then there was another guy who spoke German and he said he's going to study in Germany. Yeah. But then, yeah, so really, really cool or interesting how you meet so many different unique personalities. And they were all so welcoming. So such lovely people, I must say, really. It's been a real honor to be able to join a few hours in their valley and see how they live. Mm-hmm. And then also obviously take a few photographs of how they are, how beautiful they are. And obviously they're also very good sportsmen. Yeah. Like the volleyball they played, that was pressure.
They were really good as well. They really had the flow. Like it was so good to see. And you know, for you being a street photographer, let's just maybe can you just explain in very few words what that actually means so that people can understand that, and then I will tell them what I'm going to say after you.
Yeah, so street photography is about finding moments in everyday life that are really special, and these moments can be related to gestures, expressions in people's faces, color combinations, different lights that are falling into the frame, absurdities that are happening during the daytime, mysterious things that you just see sometimes when you walk down the street. But the thing is, like the magic in it is that it's capturing life as it really happens, and there's nothing staged. It's really just capturing candid moments. Mm-hmm. And that really makes me wander out into the world, because there's beauty in everything you can discover during your time when you're out. And I must say, though, you don't have to travel the world. It's very important to be able to photograph where you are. Mm-hmm. Because even where you are, you can find interesting things, and you just have to walk out with open eyes and you'll see them. And that's the beauty. You discover your own home very, very differently.
Yeah. And how did you get into street photography?
Was during a trip in South America where someone gave me a camera and I just took photos. And basically then I just looked through the internet and I thought, like, wow, there's so many cool photos. And right, I can also try to do that. And was a bit imitating and sort of still in the process of defining my own style, but it definitely involves a lot of colors and absurdities, like just the absurd in the daily life.
And so this was like, what, more than 5 years ago that you decided, okay, I'm going to give a shot at this photos thing.
Like 8 years ago or nine.
Okay, nice. And what would you say, do you have a favorite picture today?
Today?
Yeah.
Like out of all?
Just generally, do you have a favorite picture?
Of mine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay. And?
Which one?
Where am I going with this?
Yeah.
You ask. No, I'm just curious because obviously you've been doing this for, you've been taking photos for 8 years. There's probably too many for you to say that this is my favorite, unless you do have an absolute favorite photo.
No, I have a different philosophy approaching it. Okay. So I say the best photo I take will still come, because that gives me optimism to think about the future. Mm-hmm. Because the best picture is still going to happen.
Nice. And do you think, would you say that, and you don't need to be humble, but would you say that you think you've got a sort of natural eye for it? Is that something, of course, you have to nurture the eye, right? You have to develop. But I believe that there's such a thing as, in any art, there's talent. There's talented people, and then there's people who are maybe not as talented, but they work very hard to improve their craft or whatever.
No, I don't think I'm talented. for me, it comes down to being curious. You have to, you need to have the natural interest in it, and I think that I have. You need to have discipline because it's hard work. You need to put a lot of time in it, and you need to be willing to learn from others, and also learning for yourself, because you're often in uncomfortable situations. Mm-hmm. When you follow me around, our friends will always say like, oh, this guy is stupid. He's so, he's not stupid, but he's so embarrassing. Like, he just walks there and takes photos, and he doesn't even think about how he behaves. And that's what you have to take off as a photographer. Mm-hmm. You don't care about anymore how you're perceived. Mm-hmm. You're just blending in with the scene. Or if you take portraits, you just go straight up to these subjects that you see.
Okay, so yeah, you've said the speech. So anyway, onward and continue back to the journey in Pakistan. So we head back to Gilgit. We spend our final night in the valley, and we wake up at the crack of dawn again, now heading back towards Islamabad. So same 20-hour journey we're about to endure. We have a flight to catch at 5 in the morning. So we are slightly anxious that we might not be able to make it on time. Rather, I was, but you had no fear.
There was a lot of discussions of how we would go back. You know, others, they even took a private car to go back faster. Others took a flight without a flight ticket, tried to hop on the plane without a ticket, just, you know, because in Pakistan you might be lucky and get a ticket just when you show up. And then others were thinking, right, we should probably leave even at like 9 p.m., drive throughout the whole night and then arrive earlier in Islamabad. But in the end, what we did was just leave a few hours early. Left it like
some people drove though.
For yeah,
they had a crazy experience. They were nearly in an accident.
Oh yeah, they had a reckless driver.
Yeah,
crushed a dog,
and apparently just missed another driver head-on collision and got the people at the back. So yeah, stick to the guide if you were ever to go to Pakistan, people.
If you have a good driver, stick to the driver. Yeah. Really, they are so good. And what we decided was like to leave at 4 or 5 a.m. and then basically we drove the whole day until 9 o'clock in Islamabad.
Mm-hmm. We did encounter though, we were two landslides lucky. We had so there was a point where it was very foggy, it was very rainy, and we got to one stop and the driver received a call, and then the driver came and told Malik, yeah, so there were two landslides that happened about
just behind us. Oh my god, what a feeling. And
like, I mean, guys, it's a landslide. It's not like a little mud that you find. It's literally the earth moving like a flow, like a lava, like water.
Yeah, it's just projectiles flying around, like stones. That
debris,
and it's like they can smash you.
Exactly. So.
So the road was blocked afterwards.
Exactly, but we were lucky because we'd already passed that point where the landslides happened. But on the way back, as we were getting closer to Islamabad, we were stopped by, of course, the police again, and they said you cannot go anywhere without a guide. And we're like, our tour guide was like, these guys they have a flight to catch. They need to get to where they're going, otherwise they're gonna miss the flight. The guy's like, I am under strict orders by my superior not to allow you guys to travel without a guide. And we then find out that that same day, or was it the day before? That same day, in Karachi, there was a suicide bomb attack on some Japanese foreigners. Luckily the foreigners were not hurt. I think he wasn't able to detonate the device and he was shot and killed. And so basically security was tightened. So we were told you might miss your flight. I don't care, but you're not going anywhere without any security. So much so that the further on we got and we changed guards, it got to the point that we got the commandos. Now these are the military police. That's what Malik told me. So we had these guys, like five guys in the van, with AK-47s, and we stopped at one petrol station just outside Islamabad. And this one guy was standing outside the bathroom. Somebody went into the bathroom and he was just holding his AK-47, coolest but scariest thing I've ever seen. And yeah, I mean, you know, we're very lucky. We made it back to Islamabad We had a fantastic time. We looked back on it. We were very happy to have made it back okay, safely, with no, yeah, nothing but good memories and interesting moments and fantastic celebrations of love and friendship. And I mean, we were very happy to be home. But I think we were also very lucky to have been able to experience this. There's not many people who can say that, you know, they've been to Pakistan and have had the chances that we've had to see the world like this.
Yeah.
It's amazing. And I believe you created a little zine.
Yeah, I made a book about just the trip, basically.
And where can we... This is now your chance to, like, plug it in.
It's not published yet. I don't know. I guess on Instagram one day.
So, Leo has an Instagram page called Leonard P. Pictures. I will put his handle in the description box. I will also tag him in the, you know, promo vids to come. And of course, when the episode comes out, you will be able to find him linked. He does have a new zine coming out, which is, what is the name of it?
Pakistan.
Pakistan. And...
And what?
It's
beautiful. What?
you're so bad at this. You're so bad at plugging in. I even remember it. It's called Pakistan of beautiful persons and faces.
Views.
Of beautiful views and persons.
Persons and views.
Okay. See? This is what I expected you to do. Anyway, this will be coming out soon. There've already been some exclusive sharing. DM him for information on the book if you're lucky enough to get it for free. Yep. If not, too bad, so sad. Don't wish to be you. And I mean, is there anything you feel like you have come away with from this trip to Pakistan?
First of all, I'm so happy for Zuhair that he got married with Minal, such a beautiful couple.
Yes.
So really this made us go there, and I think this Zuhair made the way in, and then I'm just blown away from all the nice people we met. Mm-hmm. Malik leading this, obviously very happy to see our old friends, old and best friends, Yannick and Shiro, always just such a joyful time with them, and all the others as well. And yeah, I feel really thankful for having this time in my life. You know, one day we'll be sitting there and just reminiscing, and we say, all right, we did this. So that's very nice. And obviously I wish all the best for the people in Pakistan. It's such a shame that they have to go through some of the hardships, and I really, really hope that one day it will be better for them, because it has so much potential, this country. It's just incredible. The people are clever, the people are friendly and let's say just good spirited. And I really hope all the best for them, because you can see that they have a longing to do something in the world, and I hope the chance will be given to them.
Yeah. And on that note, guys, we have come to the end of episode 10. I can't believe we are 10 episodes in. Leo, thank you very much for being my special guest. Plot twist, guys. So, I am happy to see that there's progress in our respective crafts. For me, Pakistan was definitely very, it was very, I say, eye-opening, in the sense that, you never know what a country is like until you go there. Everyone was so welcoming, so kind. Of course, we are very happy for Zuhair and Minal on their marriage. It felt like, for me, this was a little pilgrimage, I'll call it. I feel like it was a journey where friendships were strengthened, love was seen, experiences were shared, heartfelt stories were shared, cultures were mixed.
Hunza water was drank.
And some more. And guys, from me to you, and from the Wine and Uncorked Chronicles Studios, peace and love, and we'll see you on the next episode. If you've enjoyed the journey,
Don't forget to raise your glass, leave a like, share your thoughts, let me know your favorite moment. Until next time, continue savoring the richness of life's mysteries. This is Sylvie signing off from Wine and Uncorked Chronicles. See you on the next episode.